Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, I'm going to bet you that you've never heard of the Native American Studies Center in neighboring Lancaster. I haven't either. That's why we've got our guest here today by the name of Chris Judge. He's an anthropologist, and he's a co-director of the center down there in Lancaster. And we appreciate you, Chris, coming all the way up here from Lancaster to be with us today.
Thanks for the invite, Manny.
Tell us a little bit about Chris Judge.
Well, I grew up in New Jersey. I came to USC in 1978 to study economics. I lasted 15 days before I realized I'd made a mistake. And then an undeclared major advisor asked me what I wanted to do when I was 10 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, Forester, smoke jumper? No, I want to be an archaeologist. Well, good. That's the only one I can help you with. Send me to the anthropology department, and the rest is prehistory.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow. So let's do this. Let's define for people what is the study of anthropology so they understand.
So the anthropology in a general sense is the study of humans. There's four subfields. There's cultural anthropology that studies living, breathing people. There's linguistic anthropology that studies the connection between language and the spread and of culture. There's what we call biocultural anthropology or forensic, you know, look at the evolution of humans over time, but also assist law enforcement with identifying skeletal remains. And then the fourth field is archaeology, which is what I do, looking at past civilizations and past societies by digging in the ground and finding the things that survive in the ground and trying to piece it all together.
So you've been digging in the ground most of your adult life.
I have. Started in the early 80s.
Okay. So, here in Lancaster?
You know, the only dig I ever did in Lancaster was when they were widening Highway 9. But I did a survey from Lancaster to Richburg.
Oh, boy.
The only time I've done any in Lancaster. My work has mainly been in the Watery Valley with late Mississippian period societies. The Mississippian period is the final chapter prior to European invasion. And then I've done a lot of work in the Great Petey River Valley in the eastern part of the state.
Phew. So that brings me to a need to understand what the Native American Studies Center is in Lancaster. I mean, how long has that been around?
So the Native American Studies program started in 2005 with the first hire, and that was Dr. Stephen Criswell. He's the director of Native American Studies. It's a folklores. And then we've grown to include six faculty. So we have an artist, Brittany Taylor Driggers, who curates our collections of modern art, modern Native American art, designs our exhibits. We have an archivist, Logan Coughlin, and they are charged with keeping up with the books, manuscripts, photographs that we've acquired over about 20 years about the Native American groups in South Carolina. We're largely Catawba and Cherokee, but we are also collecting as much as we can on the eight state-recognized tribes in South Carolina.
We have eight tribes?
There's eight. There's the, if I try to name them, I'm going to mess up, but the Edisto Coosa Natchez, the Waccamaw, the Wassamasaw, the Piedmont American Indian Association, which is a Cherokee group, the Eastern Cherokee, Southern Iroquois, and United Tribes of South Carolina. There's two PD groups, the Santee, and I'm running out of room.
You're doing pretty good.
So I think those are the main ones, and apologies for anybody that I forgot. But we
and the Catawbas.
And the Catawbas are the only federally recognized tribe. And we're about 18 miles from the reservation over in Lancaster. We have the largest collection of Catawba pottery. We have over 2,000 pieces, most from about 1970 forward, but we do have some that were made in the late 1800s.
So now, is the center part of USCL?
We are part of the University of South Carolina, Lancaster. Now, we're located in downtown. We're in the historic district downtown. We're one block south of the Robert Mills Courthouse on Main Street.
Right.
The university is about a couple miles away up on the bypass. So the six faculty, and I'll get to the other three I forgot in a minute, we all teach. We're hired as professors, but we also are committed to doing the research in our various fields. So I think I got to artist and archivist. We have a historian, Evan Noe.
Right.
We have a linguist, Claudia Heinemann Priest. Myself as archaeologist, Stephen Crystal as the folklorist. And so that group makes up the faculty of the Native American Studies. So we're all kind of have niche research interests studying South Carolina Native Americans.
That's interesting. So this all got started. I mean, how did it get started?
The center or the program?
Well, I guess both.
We'll do both. Okay, so John Catalano, who was our dean in the early 2000s, wanted
this is before Walter Collins?
Correct, before Walt Collins.
All right.
And so Dean Catalano wanted to start a Native American Studies program. He got with the Catawba Nation, talked to them about whether that was feasible, and then started the hires. And so Stephen was hired first, and then me, and then boom, 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 we're up to six.
Jeez.
And so it was really the vision of Dean Catalano to start something that would, you know, embrace, appreciate, and, you know, bring to the forefront, like we're doing today, the fact that there are Native Americans in South Carolina, kind of under the radar. They live a little bit invisible to most people, but they're here, and they're vibrant communities trying to preserve their traditions and heritage.
Wow. So you offer courses to the students.
Yeah.
How many different courses do you offer?
Gosh, I don't know how many courses we offer. I think I'm allowed to teach five or six. I mainly teach the Archaeology of South Carolina, North American Prehistory. I teach Introductory Archaeology, Introduction to Cultural Anthropology.
Oh, jeez.
Then my colleagues teach courses in English Literature involving Native Americans, folklore classes, Magic and Religion, Stephen Criswell teaches, which has got a bent towards Native Americans. So we don't have a degree program in Native American Studies yet.
Right.
But what we have is something called a Bachelor of Liberal Studies, which is one of our few four-year degrees on our campus, which is mainly two-year programs. And in Bachelor of Liberal Studies, you pick some concentrations rather than a major. So you could do history and anthropology, you could do folklore and history, and kind of create a degree in Native American Studies, a four-year degree. So a lot of our students who have gone through the program are interested in archaeology or history or folklore and get their degree through Bachelor of Liberal Studies.
So here we are in the 21st century, and we're talking about something that happened a long, 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 long time ago with the Native Americans.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of interest in these courses? I mean, how big are your class sizes?
The classes are small, which is good for the student. We'd like to expand. You know, some of our classes are offered online. But we envision a time when we would have a Native American Studies degree. I think it would almost have to be a hybrid where you have part online, part in class, to draw enough people to make that a viable program. So part of our job there is to teach. The other part is to do the different kinds of research that we do. And then we have the Native American Studies Center, which is 15,000 square feet, as I said, down on Main Street. And we have all kinds of programs that happen on a regular basis. So the fourth Friday of every month, we have a Lunch and Learn lecture series. It's at noon. You can come to the center and sit down with us. You can come in by Zoom. And then we also put those on our YouTube channel, usually by the middle of the following week. And so coming up on July 25th, we have Carol Higgum from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. She'll be talking on the Dawes family and reform of citizenship. Congressman Dawes was from Massachusetts, and he tried to start a program to assimilate Native Americans into American culture. And he thought the best way to do that would be to break up the reservation lands and give Native families individual plots. It kind of backfired, but she's going to talk about that. We've started a brand new thing on the third Saturday of every month, and I think our first one is coming up. Might be the second, but it's called Pop-Up Art Market. And on July 19th at the center, that's a Saturday from 10 to 4, we're going to have Sierra Cawthon, who's a Native painter, and we're going to have the Robbins Family Pottery, who do pottery and beadwork, will be in the center. demonstrating the work and then also selling their art. We also do two markets each year. The Red Rose Festival is every May.
Oh, sure.
Big downtown festival.
Yeah. Yep.
And we are open, and we will have anywhere from a dozen to 20 native artists in the center that day. We also do the Christmas market the first Saturday in December every year. So people are looking for good, unique Christmas gifts. Come to the center for that. Those usually run from 9 to 4. And we have a bunch of exhibits that rotate on a fairly regular basis. Our curator of art, Brittany Taylor Triggers, is constantly working on new exhibits. Right now we have By Way of Water, Reviving and Reimagining Catawba Art Forms. And that is four young Catawba artists, Teresa Dunlap, Rue George Warren, Alex Osborne, and Aaron Brumgarner. So that's in our Red Rose Gallery right now. We have, and that's through the 28th of August. Soul of the South is a music exhibit. We borrowed from the Morris Center down in Ridgeland, South Carolina. And it is got a panel and a portion on Native American music, but includes blues and jazz and other kind of music forms in South Carolina. And last year we opened an interactive children's exhibit. We had received feedback that families wanted to see something for kids. So we now have a children's exhibit called the Clay and Play. And that was funded by Nutramax, one of our corporate neighbors down in Lancaster.
Oh, yeah.
And so those exhibits change constantly. And some we get traveling exhibits. Others are created by in-house.
So do you work, let's say, with the Catawba Indian Nation on, I don't know, all this stuff, trying to make sure that you're incorporating as much of their history and their culture?
We do work closely with the Catawba Nation. We have two staff people who are Catawba Nation members. Becky Garris works with us. She's the spiritual leader of the Catawba, a very much admired elder. And then Sharon Norton is also works as a assistant curator of art with us. And so we have that kind of connection to the nation inside, but we also work with Dr. Winona Hare, who runs the cultural program, and then also with the tribal council and the chiefs. We've had good working relationships, I think, with the last four chiefs of the Catawba who have been around in that period.
So you've got 2,000 pieces of Catawba art. 2,000 pieces?
Of Catawba pottery.
Catawba
that doesn't include all the different kinds of art, beadwork.
Okay. Well, you got thousands of pieces of everything, art and pottery.
Yeah.
All right. So do the Catawbas ever say, we'd like to have some of that back? Have they given us some of it?
You know, we wondered if they ever would, and I guess, you know, we would probably work with them on that. You know, the Cultural Center has a nice collection in the archives over at the Nation.
Right.
They have pottery. But I don't know of a time when they've specifically asked for anything back, and we'd have to, I guess, cross that bridge when we got to it. But I think we would try to work with them. If there was something that they felt was an important part of their cultural heritage and they wanted it, you know.
So does the Native American Studies Center ever get into talking about the land claim settlement issue that came up here back in the 1980s?
Well, you know, that, of course, was prior to us, and the Catawba Nation, you know, worked out federal recognition in a $50 million settlement as part of that. But we have not really talked too much about that.
I would think that would be a great course to go through, because that was a lot of wrangling back and forth.
There was.
And it basically froze your county for quite some time until cooler heads prevailed. Former Congressman John Spratt
was in
and
that.
Chief Gilbert Blue.
Oh, yeah.
They were the two cool heads on both sides of this issue.
Yeah.
And it took months and months and months and probably years to get it worked out.
And it was fortunate that John Spratt was involved. Bill Clinton was president at the time, and they had a good working relationship. And that did end up with the settlement.
But it took the federal government, the state government, and the county government all to chip in something to make this $50 million settlement work.
Yeah.
Whew, really ought to be a course in that, because that was quite a story.
I remember
going to the court when they had a press conference when they were filing the court suit, the lawsuit. The pleading, you know, the document that you file with the court, was as high as this table is off the ground. And every person I knew, including me, was being sued.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, one of those lawyers was a guy named Jay Bender.
Oh, I knew Jay very well.
And Jay, you know, has recently given a lecture to the South Carolina Progressive Network's the Jessica Simpson School on that talking about that. We're also hoping to have him over in November of this year for our Native American Heritage Month. We'll be 20 years since the first hire. So we're going to do some retrospectives on people, and we really want Jay to come because he has a very interesting insight to that process.
As a matter of fact, I had Jay Bender on this program probably within the last 12 months. If you go back to WRHI.com and just put his name up there in the search bar and listen to that show, because he was quite frank and quite direct about all the inside baseball on that lawsuit.
Yeah, he doesn't hold back.
No, he doesn't.
straight shooter on straight talk.
He was a straight shooter on straight talk. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax you with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, here we go, Chris. This is your lesson on how we do live radio. We produce fresh subs and salads here at Substation 2. We do it in a magical formula that brings people from the outside inside. The magical formula is in the white letters, and we're going to get everybody to chant this out together at the count of three. Turn your heads over here, everybody. Come on now. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice. Garden, yeah. Garden, garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
Enjoy the Italian sub with the salami.
I enjoy just the atmosphere.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
The Piedmont Medical Center Women's Tower at our Rock Hill campus boasts fully furnished labor and delivery rooms and family care suites. Our Level 3 NICU is equipped to provide advanced medical treatments for premature infants and infants who may have complications. Inside the Women's Tower, families begin bonding with their special deliveries in private family care suites, allowing mom and baby to relax with ease. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
There are very few genuine money managers in America, and one just happens to be your neighbor. If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see what a money manager can do for you. Anderson Griggs, 324-5044, or go online to AndersonGriggs.com.
If a big outdoor project is part of your future plans, before you start digging, call 811. Within 72 hours, your underground utilities will be located and marked, and you'll know exactly where it's safe to dig. A quick phone call is all it takes, and there's no charge to find out where potentially dangerous underground cables and lines are located. Before you grab a shovel or start digging in the yard, call 811 at least 3 business days before digging. Remember, if it requires a shovel, it requires a call to 811.
I'm Bo Redman with South State Bank. From tailgate to touchdown, we're here to ensure your financial game plan leads you to victory. We're committed to supporting you every step of the way, providing expert guidance and dedicated assistance on your financial journey. South State Bank, this is Banking Forward. Member FDIC.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Love the bread. Number 19's the best.
Fresh, delicious bread.
It's fresh.
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Chris Judge is with us. Chris is an anthropologist, and he's the co-director of the Native American Studies Center in Lancaster, and we're learning all kinds of stuff that I never even knew existed. So, the question is, here we are in the 21st century. Everybody lives on these phones playing games and doing silly stuff. Why should the study of the Native Americans be of importance to anybody in today's world? How would you answer that?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that. That's a tough question, but I'm going to give it my best. You know, when Europeans first came to the shores of South Carolina in the early 16th century, there were vibrant cultures living in South Carolina, numerous languages, numerous ethnic groups. and that was disturbed by the arrival of Europeans. And to a certain extent, their history has been either disenfranchised or erased. You know, a lot of Native people talk about paper genocide, that the documents important for putting together their history and genealogy have been destroyed. An example is there's four tribes in South Carolina right now trying to get federal recognition. And the federal government wants them to have, you know, their 100-plus year history, their 100-plus year genealogy. But it's very difficult because from 1790 to 1900, Native Americans were not enumerated on the federal censuses as Native American. They were put down as black or white. And so it's very hard to find the documents that would support federal recognition. And with federal recognition, as you know, we've talked about the Catawba. There's lots of social programs and opportunities that come with it being recognized by the government. But I think because the history has been marginalized, that it's important for us to do this. Now, a story I tell a lot, which I think will give you an idea of how tough this job is Stephen Criswell, when I went to interview the Beaver Creek tribe, and that was one of the missing ones. I'm glad we came to this. The Beaver Creek are located in Orangeburg County in the town of Sally. And we went down to do some interviews. And they said, who do you want to interview? We said, well, we want to interview the chief and some of the tribal council members, and we'd like to talk to the artists. But really, we want to talk to the, you know, the oldest person in the room that, you know, can talk about the past.
The whole story.
To tell us about the past. So they said, well, we've got a 90-year-old woman, and she loves to talk. We're like, put the lavalier mic on her, zoom the camera in. So we do an interview with her. And about 40 minutes in, Stephen says, okay, well, we're going to wrap up here, but tell us about your childhood. You really haven't told us too much about your childhood. She said, honey, I didn't know I was a Native American until I was 80 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
She had already told us the community she grew up in, which was Native American when she was a child, is Native American today. And she had gone to an Indian school. You know, there are black and white schools.
Sure.
There are Indian schools in South Carolina,
right,
too.
Right.
And she had gone to one of these schools. So her family had totally downplayed the fact that she was a Native American so that they could pass and, you know, in the triracial South and Jim Crow era and make it by without being, you know, biased too much. So if you don't even know you're a Native American until you're 80 years old, there's probably a lot of other people that don't know they're Native American. And so the languages are all but defunct. The Catawbas are working on their language. They know 10,000 words. And what they mean, sometimes how they sound audibly is difficult. They've been comparing that to other Siouan languages to try and come up with that. But it's kind of a history, you know, if you look at Walter Edgar's History of South Carolina, big several-inch thick book, you know, there's not a lot about the time before the Spanish come in the 16th century and the British come in the late 17th century. But we're talking about, you know, maybe as much as 16 to 19,000 years of Native Americans living in this, what is now the state of South Carolina.
Woo!
And that blows a lot of people's minds, you know, to think that there's that long of a, that time depth. And the early times we can only figure out through archaeology, you know, try to piece those stories, gather up the fragments, try to make sense of them. The artifacts don't talk to us, but we can try to analyze them and squeeze information out of them and learn about the things that have gone on in the past.
Wow. Really, that's quite a story. So what is there left to learn? I mean, I imagine your answer is a whole bunch.
Yeah. So in my field of archaeology, you know, we've been working on the mound sites in the Camden area. A medical doctor starting around 1806 records 9 mound complexes, these artificially built earthen mounds. Early explorers tell us the chief's houses were up on top of these mounds, and the mounds were kind of the central features of large towns. We've been working on one of the sites over there, you know, since the early 70s, USC has. And I recently told the owner, she's like, well, how much do you know and how much do you need to know? And I told her, we have barely scratched the surface. You know, the site is about 30 acres. And, you know, we have poked around and dug holes. Some of it's very deeply buried. And so I think there's a lot still to learn, particularly in archaeology, in history and in folklore. There's still, I think, a lot of stories that could be told. A lot of times when we talk to Native American people, we say, well, what are the traditions you have that are native? Whether it be, you know, fishing and hunting techniques, whether it be, you know, the way you prepare food and everything. And they say, oh, no. And then they talk about something, we're like, that's native. They don't even kind of make the connection. It's just what they've always done. And so, you know, there are documents in the era of the internet. It's a lot easier to search and find things. It used to be you had to go to archives and go to libraries. Now you can sit at home and tap on the keyboard.
So you personally, you've been doing this basically your whole adult life.
Yeah.
What have you learned from this that's most important?
Gosh. Well, I guess one of the things I've learned is that the archaeological record, the sites and the information in them are horribly fragile, can easily be destroyed, and it's kind of cliche, but it's a non-renewable resource.
Yeah.
You know, if a site gets destroyed, along the coast of South Carolina, these shell rings that were built around 5,000 to 3,000 years ago, large piles of shell and arcs and circles and octagons and different shapes. And we barely know too much about these. The earliest pottery in the United States occurs on those sites of any Native American group.
Huh.
And sea level is coming up and destroying those.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
exactly
so
right.
We call that heritage at risk. And there's the Department of Natural Resources is working on a number of those. We can kind of guesstimate into the future the number of decades before these sites will be gone. And so the record of the past is really fragile. There's not a lot of monetary support for archaeology at the kind of governmental level. Changes in Washington kind of impacting that quite a bit right now. But I think there's still a lot to learn.
It's interesting to me that in today's world where everybody's so focused on technology and, you know, finding the next planet to go out, that there still are resources and entities that want to study this.
Oh, yeah.
And make sure that we don't lose it.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting.
Well, you know, we're using a lot of this high-tech technology as well.
Yeah.
You know, LIDAR is a laser beam shot from an airplane that can map the surface of the Earth. We just did our last Lunch and Learn was on LIDAR in the Watery Valley. Ground-penetrating radar and gradiometer, which are ways of looking into the ground and seeing things that the eye can't see. So we're using a lot of high-tech tools, but at the end of the day, you still got to get your shovel out and dig in the ground and figure out what it is.
Very quickly, you said there's some newsletters, information?
Yes, we're on all the social media platforms. We have a quarterly newsletter that comes out. If your listeners want to get that, they can contact me or the center. We're on the USCL webpage, Native American Studies, kind of in the middle. You can find us there. I do artifact IDs. If people want to bring Native American artifacts, spearhead pottery, into the lab, call me and I'll set up an appointment with them. And so we have a lot of things going on and a lot of ways of getting that information out.
All right, so the web address would be what?
Oh, I always just do USCLNASC.
USCL?
And then Native American Studies Center, NASC.
.gov?
Nope, I just put that into the search engine. Yep.
Good, okay. Chris, thank you very much for being with us. Very interesting to hear all about this Native American Studies Center in Lancaster. I knew nothing about it, and I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it, Manny.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relaxer with Founders, and by Caporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Okay, one more time. What we do here at Substation 2 is look at me, and it's all about fresh subs and salads. We do it 6 days a week at Substation 2 between 10 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. How we do it is in the white letters, and we're all going to chant it out together at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.